in sole possession of first place. This is Bob McCowan on Canada's most listened to sports radio program, Primetime Sports, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
My TV monitor's not working. This is very upsetting. It's more upsetting for Shannon. He likes to look at himself because that's why he sits in that
Bob, you really want to know the problem? It's turned off.
Well, who did that?
I don't know, but it's turned off. Turn it on. You have the remote.
Well, is this the remote for that one?
Yeah, turn it on.
Hang on, let's see if it works.
I mean, there you go. You turned it on.
Did I?
Yeah.
Holy cow. Where's the other remote? Oh, here it is. You'd think at Rogers we'd have
love this. Bob.
We'd have one remote you do everything with, right?
But why? Can't. No, at my house, there's five.
Do you really?
Oh, sure.
No, I'm down to, I got one for every TV.
No, this way it's easier to draw the map. You do this
what
for this.
What map?
Well, the map for my lovely wife. This is what you do for this one. This
give her one remote. You press this button, everything goes on.
This works. This is much better.
No, and then you have this little screen on the remote that says.
Oh, I have that. I have one of those.
Well, I got those for all of them. What's the universal remote, I think they call it.
Yes. What a thought.
What a thought. Like, I got one that's like $1,000. Do you think they saw me coming?
A friend of mine, just on the when LED and plasma were coming in, he thought he was going to get ahead of the curve. He bought one for $8,000.
A remote?
No. A TV for $8,000. Oh. That same TV today, $700.
Okay.
Like Kirky.
In my family room, where you have been,
yes, I have.
There is a 65-inch sharp TV.
Mm-hmm.
I paid $8,000 for that
you
TV.
Did not.
As God is my witness. But here, there's a backstory to it.
Yeah, they saw you coming.
So, no. I'm at about 4 years before, I went to Foxwoods in Connecticut.
Right.
World's largest casino. And two great golf courses across the street. You and I must go sometime.
Are you getting comped something?
For that?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
So, and then you have your little player's card that you use and you get points and then you can go buy a cheese straightener or something.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Or dinner for one at the buffet. So they have this in Foxwoods, there's this store. They have an actual store that has all of the items you could purchase with your points.
Oh.
And so I go in there and as I walk in, there's this television on the wall. And it has got the most remarkable picture I've ever seen. And it's the biggest flat screen TV I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
at that time in your life.
Yes. This is the same TV, a 65-inch sharp.
Wow.
Flat screen sharp. $128,000 US.
No.
$128,000 US.
What year was this?
Well, I'd have to, maybe 10 years ago.
Wow. They saw you coming.
Well, no. So I went, I mean, I'm sitting there watching this TV, and I know it was a closed circuit picture and everything, but I thought, this is fantastic. I've never seen anything like this good, that big, blah, 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 blah. Oh, I'd love to have one of those, $128,000. That's crazy. That's like Gord Kirk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So Gord Kirk would have bought that TV right there. But, so for the next, like, 4 years, I periodically go over to Best Buy, Future Shop, whatever, and I... Have you got a 65-inch sharp? No, we don't have that TV. And then one day I go in, we bought the new house.
Yes.
So I needed a TV for that room. Right. And so I go in, and they're showing me Panasonic and this and that. And I'm ready to buy one TV, and I went, you don't happen to have the 65-inch sharp? Yeah, we got those. He pulls it out. It's $8,000. Now, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, Bob, it is.
But that's $120,000 exactly less than what I saw it for the last time I saw it. And I thought that was the bargain of all time.
So you bought it.
So I bought it.
And now you that's the second TV because you merely
bought the big-ass TV in the
for only, you know, for starting at $15,000.
Starting.
That's the key word. The operative word, starting.
Mm. Later in the program, Eric Tillman, the new consultant for the Hamilton Tigers.
We're going to get the dirt.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I didn't even take my coat off. I better take my coat off. Eugene Melnick will join us.
Oh, we'll get the dirt there, too.
Well, he'll get in trouble. He never gets us in trouble. We manage to get him in trouble all the time.
Well, Gary can't suspend you or me now.
I don't think he... Oh, he could have.
He could
with you.
Yeah.
Never could with me.
No.
How's our dinner plans coming, me and Gary?
Waiting for you, man.
What do you mean waiting for me? Yeah. He stiffed me the last time.
We're waiting for you.
Did he or did he not stiff me?
Did
he or did he not?
They did change their plans. Yes, they did, Bob.
He stiffed me.
He changed his plans.
I'm going to let him sweat for a while longer.
So it's now in your court. When do you want to have dinner?
I don't know. I'm thinking about
it. Okay, that's good.
And Bob Nicholson will join us later on,
yes,
too. Tim McCarver, I can remember when Tim McCarver played baseball.
So can I, actually.
Catcher, St. Louis Cardinals,
Bob
right?
Gibson.
Yeah.
World Series.
But he is, I don't know how long he's been a broadcaster, but for a long, long time. Most recently with Fox, and apparently he's going to hang it up. Our friend Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated joins us. Hello, Richard. How are you?
I was just listening to you guys. It was like a Best Buy commercial with you guys talking electronics.
Well, you probably got something free for saying Best Buy, too.
I not only did I not get anything free, but I would never take graft from anyone, man. As everybody on this call knows, that that separates the pros from the clowns.
There you go.
Well, just paint my face any color you like and give me a red nose because I'm a clown. If you got something for free, I'm right here waiting for it. Send it over.
The hand is out.
Huh?
The hand is out.
Well, I mean, look at, you know, it's like a hooker. You know, we're not discussing who you are. We're discussing how much.
Wow. This is Canadian radio.
Oh, man. You can't get this type of radio where you live, Richard.
Yeah,
not in New York, man. I can get it on the street, but I can't get it on the radio.
There you go. Well, I don't know. I remember driving up 95 once, listening to Howard Stern on WNBC.
WNBC.
That's right.
Mr. Imus, WNBC.
That's right.
Those are the good old days, huh?
They were.
Can I just listen? This is an aside, but you know, I respect both you guys, as you know. Don Imus, to me, is a horror show and has been for 25 years. How, one, is that guy still on the air? You guys are both in radio, so you can tell me. And two, I mean, what am I missing? What was I missing in the 80s and 90s? Was this a world-class talent, or was he just ahead of his time in terms of being a little risque? Because, you know, having grown up in New York and having heard Imus, my God, he's horrible. I've always been a Stern guy and an Imus hater, but yet Imus is still on there. I cannot figure it out.
Well, but I think that's a matter. I mean, I respect your opinion, sort of.
Thank you.
But see, I was the opposite. And I'll tell you, the simulcast, like we are on television now, we've been on TV. How long has this show been simulcast? 10 years?
No.
Something like that, off and on? Eight years. The genesis of simulcasting this show came when I was living in Las Vegas during the I went there for the winter months and got insomnia, woke up in the morning, 4 a.m., turned on my television set. I'm flipping the dial. I come to MSNBC, and there's the Don Imus radio show on television. And I looked at it for 5 minutes, and I said, that is the future of radio.
It's a good point. And he was ahead of his time. And I get, you know what? That's fair. And I have to be fair. In terms of what everybody's doing these days, from, you know, Dan Patrick to you guys to everybody who's filming
Mike and Mike
radio show, he was ahead of his time. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing about Imus that I think has changed is that I do think 20 years ago there was a lot of substance to his show. There was a lot more social commentary, whether you agreed with it or not.
Well, it was principally U.S. politics. That's principally what
Imus did. Listen, the first place they actually did the simulcast, in many ways, he was still doing it on an all-sports radio station. He broke every rule in the book.
He's on WFAN.
Yeah.
So,
but now when I see him, it's, you know, it's all bumpers, it's all wide shots, it's all this, it's that. Imus mumbles for 35 seconds and goes on, and then they go back to commercial.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not very much now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, again, the guy, as a Stern guy, it's sort of, I'm probably built by nature to be against Imus, but I will say that, one, your point about the simulcast is dead on, and that's interesting, and two, I do remember, you know, when he was sort of a player in the game, major political figures were coming on.
Oh, my God.
The show, you know, he had the Tom Friedman's, the Maureen Dowd, so his place, you know, he was a for a certain kind of, you know, highly educated, kind of elite editorial crowd. His show was the place to be. That's very true.
And he had a great had a great cast of characters with him. You know, when you look at Charles and all those guys that were with him for the longest time, and they, in many ways, carried a lot of editorial content for him.
Well, that's subjective, but that's fair.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and
no, it is subjective, absolutely.
Well, no, and I was always an Imus guy and not a Stern guy. While I have great respect for Howard and his talent, you know, his act, I thought it was, you know, certainly he was the ultimate shock jock. And it worked for me for a very short period of time, and then I found it old, and I wasn't really interested in hookers and strippers and, you know, what their brassiere sizes were. And that's where Stern's show went too often.
Well, my counter to that is, and obviously, it's all subjective, that's fair. My counter would be that I think he is among the most underrated interviewers of our time.
Oh, I don't think he's underrated.
There is a brilliance to being able to get people to talk about things that they normally would never talk about on any kind of talk show.
Oh, I don't think he's underrated. He certainly is not underrated by me. I think he's an excellent interviewer. I mean, one of my favorite pieces of radio, and we're going to get off this topic in a minute. My favorite pieces of radio, by accident, I happened to hear Howard interview Billy Joel in studio one morning live.
That's good.
And they brought a piano in. And I was never a big Billy Joel fan. But Billy Joel has a kind of a raspy voice because it's early in the morning and
he hadn't been home.
He probably hadn't been home, and he's got the piano in front of him, and he and Howard would talk for a little bit, and then he'd play a tune, and they'd chat some more. That was one of those unique moments in your life where you didn't want the interview to end.
Right.
I wanted it to keep going and going, and I'm sure Billy was there for 2 hours. It was absolutely captivating. And you're right. Howard is a fantastic interviewer. I just wish he would do more serious stuff and less of the, you know, titillation stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. And again, if you're someone who sort of has listened to the show for a long time, you're as much into sort of the crazy, you know, characters on that show as much as
you
are into Stern. But it's interesting. I mean, a lot of times in New York, the world used to be divided by people who are Imus fans and Stern fans.
Well, and the one thing about Stern, I would say, in the last decade, it was not necessarily Stern getting good guests, but it was good guests wanting to be on Stern's show.
Oh, no.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was one of those places to be.
I mean,
it was sort of like he almost replaced Carson as, you know.
A little bit. It was easier to go on his show because you could go on in your pajamas.
Exactly.
Because you were sitting at home.
Well,
many
times they did.
Bill Clinton sitting at home in Westchester or wherever he was, just phoning into Howard Stern.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Tim McCarver, where will he rank in terms of not just baseball broadcasters, but broadcasters in general, in your opinion?
I love the segue, Bob, from strippers to Tim McCarver.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, I think he will, you know, the thing about McCarver that's interesting to me is his longevity, for one, is remarkable. And I don't think we're going to see this, not in our lifetime. If I'm right about this, I think he did 23. I just wrote this, so I should know. He did 23 World Series as an analyst. There's no way that's being topped in our lifetime. 28 consecutive Major League postseasons on network television. That's if you think about it, that's incredible.
Sure.
So longevity is, I think, his calling card in terms of just calling the sheer number of national games that he did. His other thing that he was really good at was first guessing. When he was in his prime, when he was at his best, he was really exceptionally good at telling you what was going to happen often before it did. I'm someone who has always liked McCarver. I'm a little biased because he did the Mets and Yankees sort of in my formative years, and I thought as a local broadcaster he was really good. The interesting thing today about McCarver, though, and maybe you guys have some thoughts on this, is in terms of under 35s, people who are really active in social media, I mean, they hate the guy.
Yeah.
They think he overtalks. They don't like the fact that he's not into sabermetrics. So it's really interesting to me, the divide, the generational divide often when it comes to Tim McCarver, who really, at least for the sort of internet generation, is absolutely disliked among that crowd.
Yeah, but neither of us are in that generation, so I can't speak for how they view him. Can you, John?
Well, the only thing, I mean, being a guy who is on the air enough that, I mean, I get lambasted on Twitter for not being a sabermetrics guy, too, for my hockey commentary and the stuff that I say about hockey people. I can certainly understand it. The one thing in the end, Richard, that I would say about McCarver, who, you know, I viewed the best baseball analyst in the booth of all time, in my mind, was Kubek.
Interesting.
Everybody... No, I was biased because I met him.
Well,
a
that makes
of times.
One of us.
Well, no, but I'm not talking the personal side because I know he was an arrogant SOB.
Well, no, and we had issues.
Well, but when I'm shocked that you and Kubek had issues.
Oh yeah,
but
it was a great fight.
But the thing about McCarver is in his later years, he has been overstating the obvious.
That's probably fair.
And you know, I love when you talked about first guessing because I got taught about first guessing by Dick Ebersol. Who was the, you know, the lead, who always told you he was the leader in first guessing. And the concept really is, you tell me what's going to happen. If it happens, you look like a genius. And if it doesn't happen, tell me why it didn't happen, and you still look like a genius.
Yeah.
That's well said. You know, I think the other thing, too, is that I do think this is, this happens to guys like McCarver. It certainly happened to Joe Buck. Strangely, it hasn't happened to Al Michaels, and maybe he's one of the few guys where it hasn't happened. Is when you were on the air for a long time, I think at a certain point, because you are in front of us all the time, you know, you become polarizing by nature, and
totally.
People are going to have an opinion of you.
Always.
And, you know, McCarver and Buck have been the voices of the Fall Classic for so many people's lifetime at this point that's all
they know.
And in Joe Buck's
right.
case, you know, the game caller for number one game caller for Fox football and baseball. I mean, the guy is basically calling every big game for one company for whatever the last 15 years or so, and I do think that, you know, that does lead to some very strong opinions on both sides. The one thing I was thinking about today, which I thought was pretty interesting when I was kicking this around, is there really is a lack of great baseball color people, great analysts. You know, Ron Darling and John Smoltz are probably the leaders in terms of who would replace McCarver if they can get him away from Turner. But if you think about it and you look around the national landscape, there are not a lot of great baseball analysts, at least in my opinion.
I agree. I wonder whether that's just the demographic of the sport. And it's what I do think is happening in every sport is that athletes who you think are well-spoken of this generation or just the past generation, they don't need to work anymore. They made enough money as a player that they don't need to actually have to work at the job of being an announcer. Because that's really why McCarver got in it, because he needed a job.
Yeah, and you know, you make a good point in that, like, maybe somebody like Peyton Manning could be an absolutely fantastic analyst. But there's, I mean, let's face it, the guy's sitting on, you know, $300 million or whatever.
Right.
There's no reason for him to do that unless he really wants to do it.
Right, and you know what? In order to do that job as well as the fans demand now, it's still 6 or 7 days days a week at doing it during the football season. I mean, look
Absolutely.
At Gruden. John Gruden.
All these TV executives will tell you is you get exposed very quickly. You can't walk in. I mean,
Bob
knows this for sure. Yeah. You can't walk into a studio and rely on your name and or your fame. If you don't actually
really?
Work in broadcasting, you're going to get exposed pretty fast.
Really?
Uh-oh. Oh, boy.
I'm screwed.
Bob's done.
There goes my career.
After 30 years.
Except for Bob. They're always out. It's like Malcolm Gladwell. There's always an outlier, and Bob obviously is that.
Okay, so we got to go, but here's the next topic for the next time you're on. Think about this one. Because I was thinking about this as you were talking about young generation and who they like and who they don't like. How does Howard Cosell play if he comes back from the other side tomorrow and resumes his career?
Yeah, I think I have some thoughts on that. So I will. The next time we talk, I will give you those.
Work on it, and that's what we're going to talk about the next time. Okay.
I like it, Bob.
Thanks, pal. Talk to you soon.
Guys.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated.
Just when, if anybody,
because there's nobody was more polarizing than Howard,
and I adored Howard. Loved
Howard.
If anybody out there is into the media thing and likes all this behind the scenes stuff, there's nobody better on Twitter than Richard Deitch.
This guy
is the best. I only follow two media people. Of all the people I follow most everybody else is sports people. I follow two media people. He's one of them, and it's at Richard Deitch. Richard, you'd spell normally, and it's Deitsch. And he is fantastic.
Great
stuff all the way around, not just sports, media, news, what they do right, what they do wrong. When CBS News is in trouble, Richard Deitch is all over them.
And That's why we have him
on
prime
time. He's very good.
So what the hell happened in Edmonton with Eric Tillman? We will at least attempt to find out when E.T. joins us next on Primetime. You're listening on The Fan or watching on Sportsnet.
Brady and Lang in the morning. Tomorrow morning, 5:30 to 9. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Twenty-seven minutes past the hour. So last year, Eric Tillman is the managing general of the Edmonton Eskimos.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, he's not. And there's no real...
Late in the regular season.
Yeah. And there's no real explanation for what happened. But it seems clear that something happened. Our Ernest crew calls Eric, and Eric says respectfully, he didn't want to say anything until, you know, the thing kind of settles down. Well, so now Eric Tillman, well, a few weeks ago, he was announced as a consultant to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and this is our first opportunity to talk to him since Edmonton. Just see if we can find out what the hell happened. Here is Eric Tillman. Hello, E.T.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you.
What does a consultant do? It tells everybody. Here's what consultants do. You tell everybody else what a great job they're doing.
That's probably a good way to start off.
No, that's how a consultant keeps his job.
Well, I'm happy to be associated with Ken again, and I think what, you know, the future I think is very good in Hamilton, and I'm looking forward to helping any way that I can. And I won't have to consult much. Kent's a bright guy, and he'll quickly have things going in the right direction.
So one minute you're the general manager of the Edmonton Eskimos, and the next minute you aren't. What the bleep happened?
Well, you know, Bob, it's we're in a business of change. You know, things happen. You know, obviously there's some things from the Ricky Ray trade to other things that have been dissected. And I understand that. And, you know, there's no need to go back and revisit everything that happened in the past. You know, there are different ways to look at it. You know, one is that we went to a place that had one winning season in 5 years, and over a two-year period we had a winning record. The other is that we won 11-7 our first year and fell to 7-11 the second year. And even when you combine those two seasons and half the season before with a winning record, you know, it's a performance-based business. And I appreciate the opportunity. I wish that we had won more games. Felt for the fans, felt for the alumni, felt for the players. And, you know, the good news is I think they're well-positioned for future success. I think they've had a good offseason with the acquisition of Mike Riley and some other moves. And I think the Eskimos will bounce back strong, and I hope to do the same.
Eric, do you regret making the Ricky Ray trade?
Yeah, you know what, John, it's there's no need to go back and revisit all of that. You can't change things in life. You know, I think in this business you have to be your own harshest critic. And, you know, I can roll you out a scroll of mistakes, you know, that I made in that time frame. I think there are a lot of good things that we did, but, you know, I accept their judgment. Life goes on. I wish them well, and I'm really excited about the future.
Okay.
You know, it's part of the business. There's not a guy in this business that hasn't been fired. And, you know, you can either spend your time looking back and you can have disappointment and bitterness, or you can look forward to the, you know, and I'm a simple guy. And I've always operated by this simple philosophy. There's a reason the eyes are on the front of your head, not the back. And, you know, you learn with every experience, certainly... I've been my own harshest critic in terms of what transpired, but now I'm ready to go forward.
Okay. I'm going to ask some specific questions then. I mean, you seem very reluctant to talk about it, but I'm going to ask anyway. There was an allegation that this dismissal may have had something to do with the amount of time you were spending in Edmonton. Did you move to Edmonton while you were the general manager?
No, I didn't, Bob.
And you think that was a factor?
I think that's something you should discuss with them. Well, there was a new president that was hired when I was there. The president that came in was not the president when I was hired.
Right.
Lynn Rhodes is a good guy. He has every right to hire his own people and do things the way that he wants to. And again, I wish them the best.
Was this a major issue for you? I mean, it's not common, you would understand, to stay in one place and be have a long distance relationship with the company you work for. It's not uncommon.
Actually, Jim Popp's been fairly successful living in North Carolina the last 4 years.
Well, and I was going to say Ricciardi, when he was a general manager of the Blue Jays, lived in Massachusetts.
How'd that work out?
Most of the time, but well, ultimately, it doesn't work out, right?
Right.
You know, I mean. Do you regret that? Do you think that would have made a difference if you'd lived in Edmonton?
We can't revisit that. You know, I mean, I know the discussions we had on the front end, what we talked about, Bob, what the parameters were, et cetera. You know, again, I'm here to talk about the future, you know, not the past.
Wait, hang on. I don't, what parameters? I don't know anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
The discussions that I had when I was hired.
Oh. The parameters with the Eskimos, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So they fully believed that you could do this job living in Regina.
Like I said, guys, it was a change in ownership. They have a right to have, I mean, not in ownership, but in leadership, they have a right to want anything that they want in terms of the structure and how they want to do things. You know, it's their organization. They have the right to make those decisions. They made the decision to make a change and go forward, and I accept that.
What do you see as your specific role with the Hamilton Tiger Cats now? Because consultant is a pretty
To do anything I can to help Kent. You know, we go back. We have a strong relationship that goes back years. You know, this is an organization that has a great fan base that wants to win, and I know it's been a frustrating few years. The two previous head coaches are both good friends of mine, you know, Marcel Belfay, George Cortez, both of them in different ways. You know, George's tenure was short. In fact, I've had breakfast with George two of the last three Sundays. You know, Marcel got them on the door. I know that Bob Young and that fan base want to take the next step, and anything that I can do to help, you know, I'm going to try to do. It's an exciting time because, you know, with a new stadium coming into play a year from now, this will be an interesting year in Guelph, but I think it's going to be one that's going to be interesting. If there's anybody that can make it a positive, it's Kent, you know, in the sense that Kent does a tremendous job of building the players up, creating an environment of expectation. I think he'll put this hey, this is a fun year. This is going to be an interesting year playing at Guelph, playing the game at Moncton. Let's go out and write a great script. And I think he's got a good staff, and I think it's going to be fun to see where this team goes.
Eric, do you see yourself, I would say one of your strengths would be that your contacts in the football network across the United States. Do you see yourself as a semi-scout recruiter?
I'll do, you know, I'm helping in any way Ken asked me to, and I've got a variety of things that, you know, where he's called on me, ask opinions, ask me to be involved in. And, you know, again, right now it's just an opportunity for me. I'm still under contract with Edmonton for a few more months. This was a deal that was brokered between the two clubs to allow me to work as a consultant. I'm very appreciative of that opportunity, and I'm doing everything that I can to, you know, help them build a strong foundation. You know, Southern Ontario is really important to the Canadian Football League, and with the new television contract, people are excited. They did a tremendous job in Toronto. They've got that franchise energized, and we need to take the next step in Hamilton.
Well, they've done a pretty good job in Toronto on the field. I'm not sure they've done a very good job with the fan base. I mean, you know, it's always going to be a challenge in Toronto, but I still have concerns about the future of the Argonauts in terms of, well, of course, if they get a Grey Cup every 2 years, I mean...
Well, you know, I think, Bob, and I would differ with you there. I think there was tremendous energy at the end of the year. I think the Grey Cup in Toronto was an indication. The city, I think, embraced the Cup in a way that many didn't think that it would be done. I think they see tremendous ownership and a quality product on the field. And we have many of those same – I mean, you look at how could you have a better owner than Bob Young? I mean, he's a guy that
Oh, I love Bob Young.
That community.
And I think with the new stadium, I think there's a chance as this franchise builds and becomes successful, which it will under Ken Austin, I don't think there's any question that you're going to see Southern Ontario become much more of a stronghold for this league, and that's great for everyone.
Well, I think you're half right. I think Hamilton has every chance to be a strong franchise for all the reasons that you mentioned. And this year may even be a very interesting experiment that may actually create a new fan base for the organization.
And I think that's a great way to put it, because I think there will be people that will have contact with this franchise that haven't. And if it's done the right way, which I think without question it will be, with accessibility to fans and meeting younger fans, it's a chance to build a young fan base for the Hamilton Ticats that could pay dividends for years and years to come. You know, I look at the experience in Saskatchewan, and, you know, Saskatchewan represents just about everything that's right with the Canadian Football League. But if, you know, I invite you to come out many times when you know, I was with the Riders, Bob. One of the best things about the Saskatchewan Rough Riders is the number of young people that are in the stands. You know, the fact that,
that
they're engaged, and that's what we want to do in Hamilton. And I think the organization is committed to doing that in many respects.
Yeah, unfortunately for the CFL, there's only one Saskatchewan. I mean, that's an extraordinary story.
Eric, do you see yourself back being a manager in this league one day?
You know what? It's yes.
I mean, we're looking forward now, so we can look forward. Yeah, we're not looking back. We're looking forward.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that's an opportunity that I'll look forward to. But you know, that will come in time. You know, right now we're just going to try to win this year, and write the script. This could be a magical season. You know, let's see where we can go. You know, I've been with Kent before. I've seen what a remarkable job that he does. The environment that he creates. How good he is from an X and O standpoint. You know, it was tough. You know, it was tough when he left after the first year in Saskatchewan. And I thought that, quite frankly, a lot of people were very unfair to him that didn't understand or didn't articulate the details. I mean, we came in and inherited a team that hadn't had a home playoff game in 18 years, got a home playoff game, went to the Grey Cup and won it the first year. Kent loved Saskatchewan. We both did. We loved everything about it and the fans. But Kent's mom was sick. And he knew she was very, very ill. He went home. She moved in with him. He took a lot less money to go back to Mississippi. People have portrayed that differently. He went for less money, went home.
Really?
His mom moved in. Yeah, six figures less. We made him a terrific offer to stay. But his priorities were in the right place, family over job. He went from being a head coach to being assistant, went back home. His mom moved in. And I believe she died, and Gloria died in either August or September. And Kent's told me many times that those months with her are among the most precious that he had in his life. And I respect him for his value system. I respect him for the fact that he did what was best for his family. And anyone that's critical of him leaving this league, quite frankly, I think has their priorities in the wrong places.
Well, not us. I mean, even if it was, you know, for those reasons, I think everybody would understand. But even if it was for another opportunity that he cherished at his alma mater, then I think we could all understand that, too. Eric, we got to go. Thanks a lot, as always.
You bet, Bobcat.
Eric Tillman of the Hamilton Tiger Cats now, steadfastly refusing to discuss what happened in Edmonton.
Won't even discuss the interview because it's in the past.
Here's the thing about eyes in the front of your head. What they also gave us was a neck so that we could swivel around and look and see what's behind us.
Well, simply, I mean, Eric has always been, had some savvy in being a diplomat at a time when, you know, he feels he's obviously got a few years to be, continue to have a role in this league.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I mean, he was trying to be diplomatic. But a time
and,
when
and
you were
politically
correct,
about the Toronto Argonauts too.
No, he didn't seem to get your point.
Please,
I was going to correct him and say, Eric, you got to understand who's asking you the question.
Please, Grey Cup one will have zero impact on the marketplace.
Listen, they won the Grey Cup.
And how many Grey Cups have they won in our lifetime? And I've been around for a bunch of them. And every time they win a Grey Cup, you know, the dum-dums or the politically correct stand up and say, oh, here it is. Now here's the opportunity. Now the Argonauts are going to, now that fan base is going to come back. You know, we're going to see 33,133 like we used to every game down at the old C&E. Boy, this is going to be great. And then nothing happens. Nothing happens. Now I'll tell you what's going to happen this year in the wake of a Grey Cup victory. Nothing. Because that's historically what's happened. The only thing that's going to happen is the owner's going to line his pockets again, because apparently he's managed to get the Grey Cup once again.
No, not here, though.
Yeah, and I wonder if he's already contacting the government about the potential of another handout. Give me more money so I can put on a Grey Cup game. Hey, Braley, get your hands out of my pocket. This is prime time on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Toronto Raptors basketball. Raptors and Hawks. Tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I thought you turned that TV on.
It turned off again.
Why?
I don't have the controls, Bob. It's just like
home. Well, I didn't turn it off.
It's just like at home for me.
Something going on here.
By the way, congratulations, Bob.
Don't go down this road, John.
Bob, I want to congratulate you on winning that award yesterday.
I didn't win an award yesterday.
No. Bob, you're the anchor. You are the Fan 590, Bob. If they're giving out awards. You have to get an award, Bob.
Nope, didn't get an award. Didn't get a mention.
I'm speechless. No, you have
That's to. A first time.
You
That's
have
a first
to.
Time ever.
It's like the famous Jack Buck. I can't believe what I've just seen.
No, look, you know, I cash my paycheck. I come in, I go home. The rest of it is a complete mystery to me.
So, well, anyway, congratulations on the award.
I didn't win anything.
Oh.
Tim and Sid won an award, and they did. Yeah, and they're very deserving.
They do a good job.
They do an excellent job. We like Tim and Sid. We're pleased for them. They've been here what, 2-3 hours?
Yep.
Yeah. We've been here 25 years.
And you got it.
Don't want anything. It's too late for awards.
Really?
What else you want to talk about? We're gonna talk about the brackets a little bit later on. See, I was,
my bracket's dead.
So for the first time in about, here's what I've discovered about gambling. That when you start it and then you stop it, the whole tournament is almost been rendered meaningless for me.
Yeah. No.
And it's the simple thing of sitting down for like, 90 seconds and quickly scribbling the names of teams on a bracket. Mm-hmm. And I've done it. We've had a contest here at The Fan for years and years and years and years and years.
Yes.
Probably 10, 15 years. And every year I'm in it. What's it cost? $10 or something to get in. It's not much, and you don't win a whole lot of money. But because you're in the contest, everybody's walking around with their brackets thing, and the games are on, and you're going, I got this, I got that, blah, 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 blah. And then couple times a week, out comes the list, right? That's on the door. Is there a list on the door now? There's a list used to be on the door of the leaders.
No.
So when does the tournament start? Last week.
Yes.
When do the brackets come out? Last week.
You're away.
In Florida.
But they don't have brackets in Florida?
Well, no, they didn't send us one.
Oh.
And did you even think about it, Ryan?
Oh, Ryan.
I didn't get one either.
Mind you.
So I don't have a bracket. I didn't fill one out. I got nothing to root for.
Okay.
It's rendered this tournament almost meaningless to me. And the stupid little thing about flipping the games around and you go, oh, well, I really want to watch my team, but there's, you know, North Dakota State is playing Fairfield. Oh, who did I take in that game? Oh, I got Fairfield. So you got a rooting interest, right? You go, okay, I'll watch this game because I watch every game. But this year... No bracket, no fun.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't any fun after Gonzaga lost for me anyway. So. And I think most rest of Canada is the same way.
Well, see, one of the things I did last week when we were talking about the tournament, as I said, here are the teams I think are going to make quick exits. Gonzaga and St. Louis. And everybody kept touting St. Louis. And if and I happened to take a look at St. Louis's schedule and the way they played, man, I was very suspicious of St. Louis. There were people. Didn't Bob Ryan actually tout St. Louis?
Well, but the reason St. Louis got touted was the emotional story that they were. I mean, Rick Majerus, the longtime coach there, passes away just before the season
starts. And I get that.
And it became one of those Cinderella stories, for want of a better word. I mean,
I know Rick Majerus.
Yeah.
I mean, Rick Majerus was a very prominent figure when I was living in Vegas, and Tarkanian was coaching at UNLV, and Majerus was up at Utah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And they used to play each other. So, you know, Majerus has been on this program.
And he was one of the most colorful coaches in basketball for the longest time.
He was a great coach.
But that, I think that's why everybody
You think that's why they...
I think that everybody, you know, they made a great comeback in their own tournament, in their own conference tournament. I think that's why everybody got caught up with St. Louis.
Yeah, but their conference has got Cheeseball State in it. You know, and Mon Pa Kettle U.
That's what they would have said about Florida Gulf Coast, too, Bob. Now they're the Cinderella story themselves.
Well, they're a great story.
Only because of one thing.
Well, but nobody touted
Only because
them.
Of one
them.
Thing.
What?
The coach's wife.
I haven't seen her.
Pardon me? You haven't watched the tournament.
Well, I haven't seen them play, no.
Oh, no. Amanda Markham is her name. She's a former model. She's the coach's wife. They have more shots of her in every game than they have of the
When do they
the
play
coach.
Again? Because I'm watching now. Now you got me.
I think it's tonight.
Can't be tonight. It's Wednesday. They don't play on
tomorrow
Wednesday.
Night,
you
dope. Thursday night.
I'm there. I'm all in.
Amanda Markham.
Gene Melnick. Jack Armstrong, Bob Nicholson coming up.